connect us across place and time, age and culture and belief, and stories with life lessons buried in them for all of us to savor and to cherish. So today, introducing my guest for the evening gives me the opportunity to do a bit of time travel, way back before the MIT chapter of my life even began. The person in the studio with me tonight is someone I probably first met back in middle school in our hometown of Kings Park, New York, nestled away in a quiet corner of Long Island. Growing up, we shared giggles in French class, doodles in history, samosas during lunch, and conversations that would grow into memories as the years went on. And as fate would have it, she also ended up right here in Boston after high school, finishing an undergrad at Bentley and kickstarting an awesome career at MathWorks in sales and business. But to be honest, what I associate with her to this day are the pieces of her personality that I still remember from high school. She's one of the most kind, fun-loving, genuinely enthusiastic, and wonderfully protective people that I've ever known, and God knows I needed that back then. Frankly, I can't imagine my childhood without her being a part of it. So, as is the tradition on this show, I won't yet introduce this mystery person to everyone who's listening without asking her what's become its most infamous question. So, mystery person, if you could leave behind one bit of advice for me, for all our listeners, for the rest of the world even, what would it be?
Well, that was quite an introduction. Thank you, Aishwarya. I'm happy to be here. So, something that I've learned in my many years of life, the same amount that you've been here, is that your life is what you do every day. So, try to fit in the story of how you want your life to be, whether it's spending time with your family, pursuing a sport, pursuing a career. It's the amalgamation of things that you spend your hours doing every day that make up your weeks, that make up your months, that make up your years. And when you're reflecting back on a season or a year at school or a semester, you realize that it's all those little moments that you do every day, not the big hallmark things that make up who you are and the memories of those places and of those people. So just prioritize little things every day. You don't have to do things for your social media feed or try to go and travel and do the biggest things once a week. But realize that if you do a little bit for yourself every day, you'll look back on whatever unit of time and feel whole and complete, and you can see transitions, and it's just a really great thing to have in your life.
That's so nice to hear. I feel like, especially here in this part of the country and on this campus in particular, we're so goal-oriented. So much of what we do and how we act is with respect to that big picture idea. What are the couple of gems and milestones of this year? So I really want to dig into what you said, but let's sort of back up a little bit. Why don't you tell everyone who's listening what your name is, where you're from, what you're doing, and yeah.
Yeah, so my name's Elizabeth Devine, and as Aishwarya, just lovely introduction. we're from Kings Park, New York, which is the land of pizza, nail salons, and beautiful
beaches.
That's
about it.
And that's about it. But that's all you need for a childhood, and great people, and we had that in abundance. So I do work at MathWorks, developers of MATLAB and Simulink, for those of you who should know, here at MIT. and I did go to Bentley, where I majored in economics, and I think going to a school that was so focused on just business kind of helped clarify sort of what you can do in a scope of a life while only kind of focusing in one area, that you can have a rich life even within such a little microcosm. And I think that really helped. And MIT is similar in that way, I believe.
Awesome. So kind of going back to what you said, I kind of wanted to ask you, what part of your life experiences or of your landscape that does make up your life sort of contributed to what you said? What made you say that?
So I think that after you leave college, and I graduated in 2015 from undergraduate, and I haven't yet returned for master's or any other continuation of my studies. So what I've learned after just kind of leaving that land of schedules and due dates is that it's really helpful to have sort of routines, to surround yourself with communities. So seeing my family every Sunday and going to the gym with a certain set of friends every Wednesday, knowing that at least in the unit of a week, I'll have these interactions to make memories.
Yeah.
And I think that's important because every week you never know what's going to happen. But at the very least, I know that I'm going to see person X, person Y. And at the end of the year, you'll have all these great memories and that you wouldn't necessarily have if you're just waiting on things to happen like spontaneously yeah. by chance.
So what do you do when there are sometimes these sort of, like if there's a deadline at work or something that's sort of kind of preventing you from living that balanced and routine-filled life, what do you hold on to, I guess?
I mean, that I wish I could come from like a point of wisdom and that I've figured it out, I cracked
yeah.
it. I mean, I have little tricks for myself. When I do my laundry at the end of the week, I kind of look and I'm like, oh, there's no gym clothes in here. I guess I had a busy week, or that's funny. Like, I don't have any like work clothes. It's just little things to kind of take stock. But when I do get busy, whether it's either more intensely a social schedule or more intensely work, I think it's just knowing that you're part of like a bigger scope, that this week is part of a month and the month is going to be fine. And that,
yeah.
And I think in my job, it's actually really easy to compartmentalize like that because I have monthly goals and like quarterly goals. And I think if you're in a situation where you don't have that, maybe yeah. it's a little bit harder. I'm very lucky to have like such a just quantifiable yardstick
yeah.
for pretty much every metric of my job. So,
gotcha. You touched upon this a little bit, but something I like to ask people, what are the things in your life that you're sort of grateful for that are kind of rocks and anchors that you can go back to?
Yeah, so I think it's, just my physical being, like my health and yeah. my having the mental capacity to enjoy life, I think is where it all starts. But I think mostly it's people. So the friends, the communities that I've made post-school and preschool and in middle school. and also my family. I think that that's something that within the past 2 to 3 years, I've really put a priority on meeting my family who's of the generation above me and above that, because they're not, like, they're finite. And it's also, they have already gone through all the challenges that I'm going through now.
Yeah.
So I have a huge family, as you know, but yeah. I have, my mom is the youngest of 9, and
yep.
all 8 of her siblings and their spouses and their children all live in Massachusetts. So it's really great to kind of see my challenges and my choices through the lens of what that really broad group of individuals who I trust does. So I did that kind of as like a let's learn mechanism at the start, and now it's just such a rock to have
yeah.
my family and my friends, the family that you choose and the family that's blood.
Yeah, I'd love to hear you talk more about that. I know for me and also for you, your family is like a huge sort of part of who you are and sort of dictates a lot of what you do and how you spend your weekends and how, I guess in our age where generations are sort of splitting apart just because of space and time and also just lack of common ground. What advice do you have to give to people about like why is that something that's important?
Yeah, so to preface, I think that people's relationships and their family, it's not always a failure on your part. Like, I'm very lucky to have a family that is amazing and supportive in an
yeah.
environment that you want to be in. And I know many people where that's not the case.
Yeah.
So, but I think the main thing is kind of investing in it, because if you only see people once a year, twice a year, you kind of get these almost caricatures of them in your mind. So kind of delving deep, trying to know people as adults. Like, let's pretend I met my aunt on the street. What would I think of her, and what would I want to learn from her? Kind of coming it from that lens, it brings your guards down. And also family that you choose. Like, if you have a friend who's really supportive, start to cherish and, like, honor them as if they were your family. I have
yeah.
somebody who I make a point to see, like, once every 2 weeks, because she's really part of what makes Massachusetts home for me. And just letting her know that and having the relationship feed back into each other is just great. There's no really how to except put in the work. Sometimes you'll fight. Sometimes it'll be boring. Sometimes you won't like it. But at the end, it's you don't get another family. You don't get another chance.
Yeah. That's phenomenal to hear. Like, I guess I've encountered so few people that have that perspective. And like you said, it works for some and not for others. It depends on your situation. But it's kind of really, really reassuring for me to hear. And I guess staying family takes effort.
Yeah. So. And it's sometimes being with family is confronting kind of parts of yourself, like people who know past iterations of you. And I think that's hard for people to confront. For me, it's just like, oh gosh, they've known me when I was in diapers, and oh, they knew me in that phase from middle school. But for some people, going back to family after a really long time, you have all this baggage of like what happened in the abyss. And that's hard to reckon with. But family is something that is irreplaceable, I guess. Yeah. Which sounds really wholesome, but it's part of the routine, people. It helps balance work.
Yep. Really cheesy, but totally agree.
I know. Just very Pollyanna right now.
Yep. So I want to turn the conversation around a little bit just to ask anyone who is listening. I feel like I say this all the time, but anyone who's listening to this conversation is probably thinking, man, this girl has an amazing trajectory. She did well in high school, ended up at Bentley, studied economics, now has a great job, and this wonderful family supporting her. Is there anything that ever went wrong? So if there was one moment that you would call a failure or something that you learned from, or didn't, it's okay too, what would that be?
I mean, so just like anyone else, when you're looking in like a, people see just one part of you, they see your what you reflect out. But when you're in your own mind, you know every bad thought, every mistake, everything. You're just constantly in your head.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's no really good, like, movie failures. I think there are times where part of growing up and learning about yourself is you also learn about your weaknesses and, like, kind of what can distract you. So I know that I have a tendency to, like, procrastinate and not necessarily have the best work ethic in every single situation always, which is human. But when I was in college, I failed out of a math class, and it's the first time that I failed, and that seems silly, but I think I learned from it because I'm like, it's okay to have limits of your intelligence, and it's okay to kind of reckon with the fact that it's like, okay, maybe this isn't what motivates me, and it's hard being in that moment, and it's like hard having to look back on that and be like, yeah, I kind of just sat out on the last final. Like, it's not good choices, but you learn from it. And then life is so long. Like, I don't think that my grandchildren will be like, multivariate calculus, what happened there?
God forbid they find the transcript.
And they're just like, what's a, is that a W or an F? It's like, don't look at that, children. Look over here. Look at my Snapchat story. It's less embarrassing.
Nice. Yeah. There's so many things I want to ask, but I'm not sure how much time we have. Okay. So, do you think sort of being actively self-reflective in the sense that you're sort of looking at yourself and kind of finding ways to try and improve yourself, much like maybe when you realized you failed at a multivariate calculus, you're like, well, this isn't for me. I'm going to find something that is for me. Do you think that's something you tried to do? That's kind of a leading question. But
One of the things I didn't really mention is that part of, like, a large part of my life post-college and in college as well was, like, outdoor sports. So rock climbing and now whitewater kayaking and skiing. And a lot of those sports, they're very, like, singular task. And you need to be really in tune with yourself and say, what am I comfortable with, what are my limits, and really analyze. And I think it, over time, I just got better at being self-reflective and being able to, like, I call it controlling the monkey brain of, like, when I feel my emotions and my fear. But I think it is important, and it's, I think it's important to look at yourself with, like, grace and forgiveness in terms of, like, how would you look at a person walking down the street? Like, would you care that they didn't brush their teeth perfectly? It's hard seeing yourself from the gaze of another, but realizing that the gaze of another is, like, forgiving slash they don't notice that level of granular detail, I think that's really helped me just exist as a human, just go about and realize that people don't notice certain things about you, and that's fine because they have their own lives and you don't have to be so hung up on it. You can just go out and try to do your best every day.
Yeah, that's so true. But forgiving yourself is actually really hard.
Yes, it's incredibly hard. And I say that as if I have no quibbles with myself. But I think I just put that in a really nice way. But I always kind of think of it, I'm like, people are preoccupied with themselves. And yeah. So they're not going to, like, give you the same amount of scrutiny that you give yourself. So just relax. And yeah. it's okay to have a bad day, because at the end of the day, like, you're not a main character in a movie. Everyone is their own main character.
Yeah.
So you're like that person in the back that is like not fully animated. Like, that's who you are to other people. And that's fine. And when you're in that space, it kind of gives you some space to relax, because everyone's imagining themselves, all eyes on me. They're like, oh gosh, they're not going to notice that I wore this outfit twice. They're not. They're thinking about their mortgage.
Yeah. Everyone is their own main character. I love that. That is so true. And I feel like you nailed it. We all feel like we're the hero of the movie, but we're all the extra. You know?
So it's the Elizabeth show. It's like, no, it's not.
Exactly. I guess, what steps do you take to sort of remind yourself of that and put that in perspective? I feel like that's something I struggle with, is hounding myself for not practicing hard enough for this concert or not scoring high enough in an exam.
I think the way that I tell it to myself is, like, I consider myself, like, I don't consider myself above average in, like, kindness or forgiveness. I don't consider myself, like, saintly or anything. And so I think of how I view, like, the people close to me and the people who aren't, and I kind of try to reflect that back on myself. Like, how do I think of Aishwarya? Like, okay, like, if Aishwarya has the same level, what does she think of me? And I think it's that temporary sort of, everything will pass. Like, you, things, unless you die, everything passes. So, I don't know. It's hard. I haven't gone, like, I think the hardest thing post-college is just leaving that space of having deadlines and then, like, only having self-analysis and being so paralyzed by choice. And, like, being paralyzed by everyone says I have potential, or, like, I don't know, like, my friend's doing XYZ and they just got engaged. And you're just constantly in this little, like, boiler pot of, like, not feeling, like, worth it, or not feeling like you're self-actualized. So I think being in that environment, you just kind of have to learn the skill to calm down, just enjoy life. It's going to work out. That man over there is 65, you're 25, that's 40 years.
Yeah.
Things can happen in that span of time. So,
I totally agree. Speaking of just calming down and, like, thinking about the fact that everything is going to be fine, what are some of the sort of, I guess, extracurriculars or hobbies? You mentioned some in terms of outdoor sports and things, but what do you do to keep yourself grounded away from work?
I think it's mostly... It's outdoor sports and it's travel. I think having a diverse body of friends really helps, because then you don't burn out on any one thing. I have friends with whom I see movies. I have friends with whom I like do like religious study. I have friends with whom I do outdoor sports, and then within that niches. So allowing yourself space to kind of be different people, if that makes sense. Like, you're in spaces with different levels of expectations on you. When I'm with my grandmother, the expectation is that I will make this egg. When I'm at work, the expectation is that I will secure $30 million. Like, give yourself those spaces where you can be a different person, have different levels of expectations. I think that's a really cathartic type exercise, is being like, they don't have any expectations of me except this.
Yeah.
You can constrain yourself in that too. Don't go too far. Like, don't get like motion, like associative like personalities. Don't do that. But I don't know, I think that's it, because in this sense, it's super sappy. It's not like a Hallmark card, but like, my birthday is one of my favorite days, not because it's like my birthday, but I kind of think of like the whole year. It's like I'm a little like farmer or gardener, and I'm like making all these friendships, and then on my birthday, I get to like harvest them, because everyone says, oh, happy birthday, and you get to have everyone all in one room. And I don't know, it's just nice, because you spend all this time every day, every week, every month, building these relationships with people, and then to have them all be a really real and tactile thing. I think that's helpful in life when you have just such nebulous goals and such nebulous standards of what would make me feel like I've succeeded over the graduating class of 2015 or over like these 15 people who had my major. It's just, I don't know, it's nice. It's a good feeling to have. I think the work-life balance that I've chosen for myself post-college errs on social rather than work, which I think is, I sound sane, but I think the pressure is kind of the opposite.
Yeah, no, I love what you said about sort of a different piece of you or a different part of you getting the opportunity to grow and develop and blossom in different contexts, and maintaining relationships to facilitate that is really important. And I guess the next question I had for you is, how do you do that? At least for a lot of us, we're down one path. It's like work, work, work. Oh, I haven't talked to my, you know, friends in like 2 months, or I haven't seen my grandparents in a month, or what is...
Yeah, and I think just to circle back, it's entirely the routine. It's on Wednesday nights, except for this one, I climb. And it's okay. And we did have cake tonight, though, so... But, and on Sundays, I see my family, and then on Thursdays/Tuesdays, sometimes I go to yoga, sometimes I see these people. And getting back in the swing of it, I think you can't be everyone's best friend all the time.
Yeah.
So kind of setting kind of realistic expectations for yourself. Like you and I, we've been friends since middle school, and that ebbs and flows.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean that it's a less valid friendship. And that doesn't mean that, like, I've failed or you failed. So don't be shy. You can rekindle a friendship. And the worst thing that anyone can say to you is no. And that hurts. Nobody likes to be rejected. But it's better than having nothing. You just...
Radio silence.
Life is a constant series of trying and getting things. And you get what you ask for. If you never ask for that, you're never going to get it. And... steeling yourself against rejection, it's hard, but it gets easier every time. And I think I work in sales, so my job is getting said no to. So I think I have a little bit of practice, and I've gotten a little bit of muscle.
Yeah.
But it's really important not to be shy, because we're tribal social creatures. You can't live in a vacuum, and you can't go through life just looking at your Facebook and thinking that everyone else is not going through struggles, because everyone is. And I think being around people who you see are as successful on one plane, but then getting to know them behind the surface, I think that's another thing that really helps with the insanity of feeling the need to perform, because you see, oh yeah, well, she just got engaged, but she also hates her job. Like, it's not that it's like the schadenfreude, but it's validating to realize that people are multidimensional and nobody is like tens across the board.
Absolutely.
So, I don't know, that went on off a tangent, but...
No, actually, you pretty much summarized my goal with this show, which is everyone that comes up on here, on paper, they just, of course, we hear their highlight reels, which is they've achieved this and they're doing this and life is wonderful. But everyone has a story to tell, and it's multidimensional, and it's inspiring to hear all the pieces and to learn from it and realize that you aren't alone in any dimension.
Yeah, and I think it's really helpful. And I think every generation says, oh, it's worse for us or whatever, but I think very much so. Even the people who are 6 years younger than us, 5 years younger than us, they have all this pressure, because even when we were in school, you only had your group of peers that you're worried about scrutinizing you was kind of geographically constrained.
Yeah.
And now you have this like undefined, seemingly infinite group of peers, international, because everything is just this playing field. And that's daunting. That's daunting when you don't have yourself as a defined person. Not to say that you become a defined person ever in your life, but I couldn't imagine that. And it makes my heart ache for all like the kids who are looking at Twitter and stuff. I was like, when we were in middle school, I think we had AIM. Just dating us, but
oh my goodness,
I think, because I would walk to your house and I would just hang out with you in person. I think that's where you develop those skills, and I think if people don't have that, if they don't know those mechanisms to get support and ask for friendship and show weakness and like create stories and like create selves, I don't know, that they're doing themselves a disservice, and it's sad. There's more to life than accolades.
So, I agree.
I say that because I don't have many accolades, but
no, absolutely. If we look back on our middle school times, even then, definitely for certain groups of us or for us in certain times, it was difficult to reach out or to say that, or express that we felt like we didn't belong or try to make new friendships, but I would imagine it's only harder now.
it feels, and it's, people feel, I don't know, paralyzed by it. Like, even like in the dating world, people feel like they have infinite choice all the time, and it inhibits people from having genuine connections, like on a face level, because they're like, why should I commit or settle or try to make myself vulnerable to this person right here when I have a million seemingly other people?
Yeah.
And I'm on the dating apps. I'm within 5 miles of MIT, so I'm seeing the same pool.
Yep.
And I think it's daunting. It's hard. It's opening yourself up and letting yourself be vulnerable is a difficult skill to have, even when you do practice it your whole life. And I think a lot of people, we haven't had to develop it as much because we didn't have interpersonal relationships as the norm. We were able to have, we would supplement it with internet ones. I guess I sound so old.
Yeah. No, I totally hear you. I actually wanted to squeeze in one or two questions more before we hit the hour on a little bit of a different trend. But if there was one thing you had to say that you feared, either something external or internal, what would that be?
I think the fear of, not necessarily like the fear of failure, but I think the fear of loss, like whether it's like, like I'm petrified of losing people in my life, like not in terms of relationships, but like through death or things like that, because nothing's really guaranteed. I've had in the past, like the past year since January, I've had 2 really close coworkers, both of their fathers died suddenly. And I think you can't take things for granted. And one of the defining experiences I had in my life when we were in our senior year of high school is my cousin died when he was 21. So it's just one of those things where you can't take it for granted. And I'm terrified of either that happening to me, where I'm like ripped away from the infinite possibilities of my life and the pain it would cause others, or like to lose someone close to me. I think that's a very normal, sane fear to have. But I'm also afraid of like silly things, like when I'm climbing or when I'm whitewater kayaking. It's just constantly trying to conquer the fear and do the thing, execute on the move. I don't know.
But a lot of what you said to begin this whole session, I think, is almost a piece of advice with regards to that, is take each day as it comes, an hour by an hour. An hour turns into a day into a week.
Yeah, because you can't control the future, but you can control the present. And that's trademark Elizabeth. No one's ever said that before me, but
Copyright. But no, I totally agree.
Also horror movies. I can't see horror movies. It's my fear.
Really?
Nope.
I'm with you on that one. I have a lot of trivial fears. Bugs, heights, but I liked what you said in terms of... okay. 5 minutes. I think I can squeeze in one more question. And it's probably one of my favorite questions, but it's a little bit tough, so sorry. But if the final pages of your autobiography ended with a favorite quote, a favorite dialogue from a movie, favorite line from a song, or even a scene from a random book, what would it be? What would you want it to be?
Oh man, I don't know. Well, since I'm writing it, because it's an autobiography, I feel like it would probably end on like a pun or something, but it's so hard for me to think of, not because I can't think of how I'd want to end my story like right now if I was writing the college years or it's just, I think there's so many defining events in my life that have yet to happen.
Yeah.
And what I value now and what I think is important now, it might seem trivial in the future. But I think it'd probably just be what I said before in terms of your life is what you do every day. That's important. And in terms of sports, fear is the mind killer, which is from Dune. I haven't read Dune. I'm sorry, everyone. But realizing that you hold yourself back more than you realize. So, be able to be mindful enough to recognize in yourself when you're being self-limiting, either because you don't believe that you can, because no one else like you has done it before, or that you're just doing, you're being, I'm being pragmatic statistically. Yeah. Pragmatism has a time and a place, but right. if you're being unduly self-limiting and unduly self-critical and holding yourself back, just don't do that.
Just don't.
Forget the haters. Just go for it.
In the minute that we have left, but how do you just, if there are a bunch of people standing around you saying, no, you're not going to be able to succeed at that. Like, you're not going to rock climb. Look at you. You're so skinny. How do you tell yourself?
I don't know. I've never faced real adversity. So I think it would be kind of trite for me to say anything. Yeah. And I respect and people who really do have to overcome things, because I've very rarely been said no to in my life. But I think it's, in climbing, it's knowing that in past situations you can do it, so now you can do it as well. If you know that you can solve, like if you can do math at that level and that's what that job requires,
yeah,
just trust yourself. Don't trust the branch beneath you as a little bird.
Yeah.
Fake it till you make it. They're all in the same sort of strain of thought where you have more than you think. Go for it. Everyone else is faking it too.
Yep. Something a friend once told me that's really stuck with me. He was also a student at MIT, and he was saying, like, everyone at MIT is like ducks on the water.
The paddling legs.
Yep.
I think it's the opposite of being forgiving to other people. Realize that people in positions above you may not inherently be better.
Yeah.
There's no value judgment. There's just because they're the next two promotions above you doesn't mean they're inherently a better person.
Right.
Sure, like respect authority and experience and listen to when people say you need more time, but at the same time, don't think that you're inherently worthless as a person or inherently less capable because you're not there yet.
Yeah. You don't know if you may end up there at some point and you might
do a better job,
yeah.
But it's, you never know if you like preemptively say, oh, well, I can't do it because I don't have an MBA. Think about it. If you think, I don't know. I don't want to go around just giving blanket advice, but just trust yourself. And I say this like solely from like a sport climbing mentality. Yeah. Trust yourself, trust your feet, trust your hands. And if you fall, you have a rope to catch you. It's all right.
Trust yourself. I love it. So unfortunately, we do have to wrap up. We're hitting the hour, but Liz, I want to thank you so, so much for being on here tonight. Everything you said was literally a gem. I need to go back through this recording and take notes.
Yeah, well, we talk a lot, so feel free to just record me serendipitously throughout the rest of our friendship.
As we keep talking.
Won't be creepy at all.
During the recording.
Thank you for having me on, though. It's been a nerd goal of me to be like on NPR, and this is the first step.
Awesome. We will get you to NPR. I promise. All right, everyone. So that's it for this week's episode. Next time, we'll have another person, another inspiring outlook on life, and yet another post-it note to add to our wall. So until then, look a little harder, dig a little deeper, and search for the story underneath. And who knows? You might just be surprised. This is Aishwarya signing off from WMBR Cambridge. Good night.
Ooh. Oh. Ooh, that sounds like Friday. It must be about 7 o'clock.
Yes, in the morning.
Is it between 7 and 8, the scene on WMBR?
Yeah, that's the one.
And with me, Paul Simmons?
And me, Nick Salomon.
Playing a selection of psychedelic rock, garage, blues, surf, exotica, jazz.
Freak beat, soul, mod.
Sounds pretty good. I reckon everyone should tune in and listen to it.
Me too, I think they should. I would.
Doesn't matter what you're doing, it's still an early morning, but it's fine.
Yeah, hey. I mean, if you're just having your breakfast.
Yeah, or you're just getting up, going to work.
You shouldn't miss